This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And I want to thank each and every one of you people for coming back and listening week after week. Here we are, we've made it to episode number 500. It's a tremendous milestone. I don't know of any other podcasts in general, I think, that have gone on this long, particularly any of the magic podcasts, but maybe I just started a little bit earlier. But anyhow, I keep coming out and grinding out more podcasts all the time. I hope that you keep coming back and that you enjoy these. I am certainly doing them for you and for myself. I'm learning a lot from this as well. It's one of those kind of things in which I'm kind of bringing you along for the ride, I guess. I'm doing this for myself, I guess, in a way, from the standpoint that I really like talking to my friends and then turning on the microphone so this way I can go back and listen to these conversations. Because a lot of times whenever that you're having a chat with somebody, you just come and go and you might remember a snippet or two or something that somebody said somewhere, but here I've got it all archived. So this way you can always go back in the archives and find the conversations we've had with literally hundreds of magicians over the last 8 years. And I want to especially thank not only you, the listeners, for coming back and enjoying these kind of eavesdropping on these conversations, if you will, but also I want to thank particularly those people who have given their time to sit down behind the mic and to sometimes kind of bearing their souls and talking about some very personal things, and a lot of other times just telling some secrets and things that they really haven't shared with anyone else, either in their lectures or anywhere else, that is very educational. I hope that you've learned a lot over these last 499 episodes, and it has been just a lot of fun, a great adventure for me. And even though there have been 500 episodes, if you stop and think about it, there have been more than 500 people who have been on the podcast, because as you know, I have these different convention updates in which that while I'm at a magic convention that I'm talking with several people who are there. And so there may be 4, 5, 6, 12, however many per day that I would then post in those convention updates. And of course, some of the podcasts that I have produced included more than just one person who was on the other side of the microphone. Like whenever we're talking with people talking about their theaters that they have open or different experiences that they have had where that they've had something stolen from them. That was one of my favorites, going back and listening to some of the stories of some of these guys that had some things stolen and whether they got them back or not, and kind of an interesting point is that there have been, golly, probably closer to 1,000 magicians over the last 8 years. So congratulations to all of the people who have spent the time and been on this journey here with me. So I thank you guys very much. And here we are at episode 500. I want to especially thank for this particular episode not only my guest, Uri Geller, who is a very special guest and doesn't do podcasts or interviews really much with anybody nowadays, but I want to especially thank Mr. Joe Corsillo. Joey's a good friend of mine and has been for years and years. And when we were together at Magic Cuba, I had a conversation with him. And as we were talking, he happened to mention that he had represented Uri Geller in some legal affair. And I said, whoa, wait, what? And he said, yeah, I'm friends with Uri. And I said, do you think that we can get him on the podcast? He said, well, just a minute, I'll text him. He did. Uri got right back to him and said, for you, I'll do this. So that's one of the things he talks about here in this podcast. Then also that he was doing this because that I'm a friend of Joey's. And so if I'm a friend of Joe's, then I'm a friend of his. And you will see also and feel that charisma that comes across genuinely from Uri. He is such a nice fella. And, you know, I'm not a fanboy and I am not really put off by talking to much of anybody. But whenever that I first started talking with him in this podcast, and the first thing I did is I referred to him as sir, and he said, you shouldn't do that. And it caught me off guard a little bit. You know, my thinking is that out of respect that you should be calling people sir, or men in particular, I guess, or ma'am, if a woman. But the point is that I respect people. And so it's a matter of respect in which I would say sir. And that's because I put God first, people second, and me third, basically. Anyhow, he had caught me off guard and I kind of lost my train of thought and got a little bit off my footing. So anyhow, that's kind of what happened for the first part of this podcast. So I'm going to step out, let you enjoy this this week's guest for the 500th episode. Please welcome my guest, Uri Geller, all the way from Old Jaffa, Israel, here on The Magic Word.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Uri. How are you this evening, sir?
Fantastic. Listen, Scott, when you speak to me, don't call me sir. Just call me Uri.
Okay. I'm sorry. You know, I'm from Texas, and that's just kind of a natural thing I do for everybody, even...
I know that. But when you call someone sir,
yes,
what it shows is that you either have a military background, and they brainwashed you to say sir, and you also demean yourself by calling other people sir. Everyone is on your level. You don't have to call anyone sir unless you meet the Queen of England.
And I guess then it wouldn't be proper either. Probably Your Majesty.
Exactly. But what I'm trying to say is don't take it in a negative way.
Yeah, okay.
Is that when you speak to people, I think most people like to be called by the first name.
Yes.
Now, if you speak to an official from Washington, someone who is a senator and all that, you can give that respect. But otherwise, just call people by their first names. They like that.
You know, no one's ever told me that before. That's good advice. Thank you. Okay.
You're going to hear things from me that no one ever told you.
Well, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to speak with you today for this podcast is because that I recall hearing a wonderful conversation that you had, or rather a lecture, I guess, in Italy at FISM a few years ago. And you just have so much charisma. It was the first time I had a chance to hear you personally. And I was just so impressed, you know, with your story.
Thank you.
And your personality. And I thought, I just would like to spend some time and get to chat with the gentleman.
So. No problem. Here you have me for an hour. You can ask me whatever you wish. I got the message from who sent me the message?
Yeah, Joe Crucillo.
Oh, Joe, and I said if Scott is your friend, then I'll do the, because I don't do podcasts. I get, you know, I'm not boasting, but I get like 150 requests per day from around the world.
Wow.
To do radio interview, podcasts. It's almost impossible. Anyhow, so fire away, you know, you switch on your recorder, whatever. If you've started recording, that's okay.
Sure, yes. Well, I started the conversation, I just had the recorder going. So we are going now, and I want to thank you very much again. That for those people listening, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. And today my guest is Mr. Uri Geller, as you've just heard, or as we call him, just Uri. Thank you very much, Uri. It's a pleasure to speak with you today. There are a lot of things, obviously, I want to cover, and I'm going to let you do, obviously, most of the talking as well, after I ask just a couple of questions, and you can take it down whichever avenue that you wish. I was thinking, for an example, I know that you normally don't, you say you don't do podcasts, but I'm sure you get requests for conventions, and the only one I know that you had attended was for Richard Kaufman's Genie Convention a few years ago, and of course, FISM here recently. And this podcast really is mainly for magicians who listen. There are some who are not who listen then as well, who are outside that. So I know you don't consider yourself then as a magician then as well, but really more of a person who's going to do psychokinesis and dowsing and that kind of a thing. You've inspired so many people, I guess. I don't know where to get started as far as like on your powers. Because I also want to talk about your path on how that you had gotten the notoriety you did by taking photos with celebrities until people were finally saying, who is that? Who is that with the celebrity? Then finally, who's that celebrity who's with Uri Geller?
Okay. Scott, by the way, you can start the interview with my little revelation about calling people sir.
Okay.
So I don't mind. But listen, Scott, first of all, it's great to be with you on this podcast. To all the magicians and mentalists and whoever is listening to you now, and to the youngsters, because there are so many young people who want to become mentalists and magicians, I send you my love, a big hug, a big kiss from Old Jaffa. I'm sitting now by my window. It's kind of dusk here, and Old Jaffa is 6,000 years old. For 48 years, I lived overseas with my wife, Hannah, and my two kids, Daniel and Natalie. And 2.5 years ago, we decided to come back to our homeland. We're very happy here. I'm opening a museum, Museum Uri Geller. So if you ever visit Israel or Jaffa, email me. My email address is on my website, urigeller.com. I'll be more than happy to shake your hand, give you a hug. And because I'm quite accessible, I try to answer all my emails. But I would like to start with something interesting.
Yeah.
You know that I get around 300 emails a day. And many of them, as I said, are from kids who want to become spoon benders and mentalists. And they mostly, the question is, oh, Uri, oh, Mr. Geller, how do you bend a spoon? Can you teach me how to bend a spoon? And I immediately answer this. I say, forget spoon bending. Instead, become a positive thinker, believe in yourself, focus on school, create a target goal to go to university. Always think of success. Never, ever touch cigarettes, and definitely don't touch drugs.
Right.
So that's really my message. The spoon bending and all that is secondary. Most important is to educate yourself so university goes down your CV, because you never know where you'll be 10, 15, 20 years from now. You might need that university title, and you just don't know if you'll become a successful magician or a mentalist. Very few magicians are successful. It's like footballers, like basketball players.
Right.
How many Messi's, soccer players are there? How many Ronaldo's are there? How many Magic Johnsons are there? You can count them on two hands. How many David Copperfields, Chris Angels? You understand? So to become really a famous magician, it's luck. It's just good luck. If you're at the right time, the right place, if you have the right charisma. So that's my really message to youngsters.
With that as well, you hit a very cogent point there. I think that not only that, as far as if one wants to become famous, you shouldn't start out with a goal of becoming famous, because that just happens. In other words, I think you should be the best you could be, because eventually that people will recognize you, and also that will separate you from somebody else. In other words, yeah, they want to bend spoons because they want to be like Uri Geller. Well, then you're going to be like Uri Geller as opposed to whoever that you are, because you need to create your own persona, you know, and follow your own path and not try to necessarily replicate someone's act completely. You could take a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but basically you should be you, and that way that fame will follow you. But if that's a goal, you're probably never going to achieve it.
Well, I want to correct you, because it's not exactly so, Scott.
Okay.
I do believe that you do have to want to be rich and famous. That's what I did when I was young. I came from a very poor family. I had nothing. I had no money. And my task was, my mission was, Uri Geller, get rich and famous. Get famous and rich. It was a goal. Hmm. And I always say that if you can go there with your mind, you can go there with your body. Whatever you can visualize, you can materialize.
Okay.
There is nothing, Scott, that you cannot be, do, or have. Because at the end of the day, you are the architect of your own life. So you have to have that vision in your mind. Yes, I do want to be famous. Yes, I want to enrich myself. There's nothing wrong in making money.
Right.
If you become rich, you can help other people. You can help poor people. So why not be rich? And that was my main goal when I was 18, 19, 20. And I achieved it because I created a bizarre act. You know that throughout the last 50 years, my repertoire, my few things that I do, haven't changed. I still do spoon bending, and I still do mind reading, and I move a watch, and I move a compass, and I sprout red radish seeds, and that's about it. And I'm still around. And the reason I'm around, Scott, is very, very simple. The reason I'm still Uri Geller and I'm still who I am and I haven't ebbed away or I haven't disappeared is because I knew how to create controversy around me. Controversy is like a gift on a silver plate for anyone, not only magicians, but politicians, sports people, actors, singers, if there is a streak of controversiality in your life, you will always be interested. People will want to know about you. People will be curious. Why are they talking about you? And basically, I was a natural PR person, so I knew that what the great James Randi was saying was very important for my career, mm-hmm. because those skeptics built me. They created the aura of mystery around me. And I always say what Oscar Wilde said 100 years ago, Scott. Oscar Wilde said, there is only one worse thing in life than being talked about, and that's not being talked about. So to all of you guys out there who want to be successful magicians, don't be afraid to be controversial. You put yourself in a better position to be on the right side of history. Remember that. Don't go according to what your colleagues say. Do what you want. There is a lot of envy and jealousy in the magic land.
Right.
I'm not saying that all magicians are envious and jealous, but a big part of them are. But that's a natural trait. We're animals. We're human beings. There's jealousy in everything. So you've got to do what you want to be and do. Don't listen to people who will try to sway you away from things that could make you successful.
Yeah, good advice. Well, going back to that, as far as finding yourself and what you did originally to be controversial, I guess, with the spoon bending and the psychokinesis and other kinds of powers that you present, are those things that you came up with, or you got an idea, you saw somebody, and then you took that to a different level? Or, you know, what was the revelation, I guess, that you came to saying, ooh, I can do this?
Look, I think that the reason part of my success in the early 70s came from the fact that nobody bent metal for 6,000 years before me, really. I created that when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
You know, the stories I tell are true. And people ask me, and you will ask me, you can ask me, Uri Geller, tell us once and for all, here you are on my podcast, are you a magician or do you possess real paranormal powers? You will never get a straight answer from me, Scott, because I want to stay controversial. I want to stay mystical. I want to be mysterious. And the fact that I still claim today that what I do is real. And if you have a problem with that, then take a walk. let me tell you this.
Yeah.
When Mossad is the Israeli Secret Service. I worked for the Mossad for a couple of years, maybe more than a couple of years, three and a half years. They did not know how I achieved what they asked me to do. And we won't go into that because I cannot talk about the Mossad.
I understand that secret.
So they call the CIA. And these things are checkable. Get on my website. See what the CIA scientists say about me. So they called the CIA and they said, look, we've got this young guy who is doing these things. He's bringing us information that we just don't understand how he does it, how he gets to that information. Can you help us? Can you test this guy? So in 1972, the CIA takes me out of Israel, and I go straight to Palo Alto, to Stanford Research Institute, which is Stanford University today, and they test me under laboratory controlled conditions, where you cannot touch the metal, where telepathy is done in a shielded room, in a Faraday cage, where a CIA scientist in Langley, Virginia, holds something in his hand, and I, in Palo Alto, a few thousands of kilometers away, duplicate exactly that object. And by the way, in the 70s, there was no Skype. There was no internet. There was no Twitter. And there's no FaceTime. There was an old black phone. So I blew their minds. And the CIA actually, and other MI5 and other intelligence services gave me the credibility that what I do is real. Just a year and a half ago,
and that's
the CIA
released... what became to be known as the Geller effect. Is that correct? I mean, they even named that after you.
That's correct. A year and a half ago, the CIA released some of the documents. They're all on my website. Some of them are so freakily mind-blowing that it's really hard to believe. I'll tell you in a moment. But the Geller effect really, Scott, came from my invention of picking up a spoon, holding it in front of the camera, and I'll give an example. It was a BBC 1973. And before I started stroking the spoon gently and saying, bend, 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 I looked into the camera, and I don't know, Scott, if you ask me what made you say that, I just don't know. But I looked into the camera and I said, everybody at home, go and get your spoons. Go and get your broken watches. I didn't realize that I sent 10 million people to the kitchen. Everyone ran to get a spoon. They wanted to experience this spoon bending for themselves.
Sure.
And what basically happened, when I bent the spoon or the fork, spoons started bending in people's homes. Watches that were broken, pocket watches that were 101-year-old, unfixable, started ticking. It was a mass hysteria. And that's where the Geller effect, that title comes in from.
Ah, I see. Okay. Well, with that, then you went on, and as far as becoming controversial, then started doing more television shows, or I guess what was your first big break? I know the Johnny Carson Johnny Carson Tonight Show was the big break in the U.S., but what was it overseas that made you a star enough to think you would be coming over to the States and you could break in here?
The biggest show that I did, the first one, because every country had a big show, you know, there are at least 25 countries that invite me, but I can't go to everyone, to celebrate the largest ratings that they ever had, was the Uri Geller show. And again, some of you might think that I'm showing off and boasting, but I don't really care. So the BBC show was the biggest TV performance that I've ever done. Then Johnny Carson enhanced my career by me sitting there and things not happening. He basically, I walked into a trap, as you probably all know. The spoon that I bent in Ricardo Montalban's hand wasn't impressive enough for Johnny Carson. So he kind of sneered at me, taking cigarette puffs from under the table. And I thought in my mind, did I tell this story a million times?
Yeah.
Uri Geller, you are destroyed. That's the end of me. Go back to the hotel, pack up and go back to Israel. So I went back to the hotel devastated. I fell on the bed. I was gutted, as they say, because I thought my career was over. And the next morning, the operator wakes me up and she says, Mr. Geller, I have a Merv Griffin on the line for you. So I said, you mean the Merv Griffin? And she said, that's who he says he is. And it was Merv Griffin. And Merv says to me, Mr. Geller, I saw you last night on Johnny Carson. I want you on my show this week. And that's when it dawned on me that Oscar Wilde was right. No matter what they say about you, as long as they spell your name correctly, is good for you.
Right. Right. Yeah, that seems kind of odd that you had appeared on a nationwide show before millions of people and failed and yet turned that into the greatest success story of all time there.
Because Scott, and to all magicians who are listening, failures are good for you. Because if you fail on NBC... don't worry, because the people at home will like that. They will say, wow, this guy, he must be real. He must have real powers, because if he was a magician, the thing would work. So many a time when I failed on television shows, not because of Johnny Carson, but because I was tired, because the thing didn't work, people believed in me more. Listen, Scott, let me remind you something, and to this again to all magicians and mentalists, listen. Did you know that 75.9% of Americans believe in at least one paranormal phenomena. Americans believe in lost civilizations. They believe in alien encounters, in past and present, by the way. They believe in telekinesis. They believe in fortune telling. They believe in Bigfoot. They believe in haunting spirits. They believe in ghosts. I can go on and on and on. Sure. That is 76% of Americans believe that there is something out there. But I think that you should also, you as magicians, you also should believe that there is something out there. Don't be closed-minded. Be open-minded. If you're open-minded, you will be a happier person.
Well, that's a very good point. You can learn a lot more if you are open to other opinions, I guess.
Exactly. And remember, Scott, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. So it's not easy to plan someone's life. But at least if you're a positive thinker, and if you're confident, and if you believe in yourself, and you keep a rather healthy lifestyle, you don't smoke, you don't touch drugs, you eat healthy foods, you exercise, then your life will be more positive. If you surround yourself with positive people, that'll give you more energy. Everything is made from energy, by the way. Right. And you know, Scott, when I say energy, this is not bullshit. Energy is something very powerful. Albert Einstein in 1924 proved with the magical equation of E equals MC squared, which probably you all remember from school, mass and light and everything we perceive equals energy. Everything is made from energy. You are made from energy. I am. The phone I'm holding in my hand, the table, listen, you heard me tapping a table. Well, that table is not solid. This table is energy. Energy constantly moves. What is amazing is that energy cannot be destroyed. Now, I'm an open-minded person, but I also believe in God. So I believe in the afterlife. I simply ask the simple question, hold on, if Albert Einstein proved that everything is made of energy and energy cannot be destroyed, then one must ask the question, then what happens when we die? What happens to our soul? What happens to our spirit? So there are so many things beyond us, like consciousness, quantum mechanics, quantum entanglement. Maybe, Scott, you don't even exist. Maybe I'm creating you. Or maybe I don't exist. You're creating me. I mean, just think this way. Consciousness is the state or quality of awareness or of being aware of an external object or something within oneself. Think about this. It has been defined as awareness, subjectivity, the ability to experience or to feel wakefulness, having a sense of selfhood, and the executive control of the mind, control of the mind. So my message to magicians and mentalists, if you want to be successful, start brainstorming. Start looking for something new that no one else did before you. Because most tricks today, and believe me, I've seen enough. Yes, I'm not a magician, but I had my successful show, the Next Story Geller, which went worldwide, 60 countries, including America, NBC. So I've seen enough magicians and enough mentalists. And I'll never forget the moment when Chris Angel bent over to me to explain me how a trick was done. I told him, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. I want to be amazed. I want to have a wonder of magic. I want to be thrilled. I want to be bewildered. So you've got a brain. Think, how can I create something that has not been done before, that I'm not copying something from someone else? And that's a spoon-bending thing. That's what made it. Secret of success is originality. I'll repeat it again. The secret of success is originality.
That's very true. That's great. Boy, there's so many things you touched on there that kind of I can go on different directions. One of the you were talking about, philosophers have been discussing this for years as to energy and where it's going to be going, because there have been just, you know, each generation there are more people on the planet. And so in other words, that perhaps that energy turns into souls. So perhaps the energy are souls that are trapped waiting for more bodies to inhabit so that energy can create these. So where we may have 3.5 billion people on the planet now, by 2050, we'll have 11 billion people. So there are more souls that can inhabit those bodies, and they're coming from some place and will be going to some place. So have they been just awaiting a body to go into? Anyhow, started to get pretty philosophical there, but you see kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, and I agree with you, because, you know, what do we really know? I mean, if you look out there into the, you know, ultimate sky, the ultimate heaven, the dome be above us, it's infinite. There is no end. You know, the lying down symbol of eight, infinity. What is infinity? That there's no end actually to outer space, and there's no end to inner space. Unbelievable. We know very little about our brains. And I do believe that every 10,000 years, we will develop incredible powers. We will be able to teleport. Telepathy will be just a children's game. Right. We'll be able to travel to stars with non-physical bodies. You know that Einstein was an amazing man. He won, and I'm going to quote now, because he said something incredibly beautiful. So you magicians and you mentalists and you kids who are trying to be magicians, listen to this. How important magic is and wonder is. This is what Albert Einstein said. He said, the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer pause to wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. So what this teaches me, at least me, that you've got to be open-minded. You've got to believe. And if you are open-minded, you allow your mind, you enrich your mind with wonders, which could give you ideas to create feats and tricks and things that might look supernatural, might look paranormal. So that I think it's good advice.
It is. That's tremendous. You know, you were talking also earlier about the more, I guess, things changing all the time, then too, certainly that the way of getting your name out there and becoming more well known has changed with social media, which is so much different. I mean, it didn't exist, of course, whenever that you were working with that. What would you, I don't know how much, how deep into the current social media that you are, but would you have any advice, you know, for those as to what you did, or perhaps a path they could follow to getting to be more well known through self-publicity?
Well, look, the most important thing to remember, in Israel there's a word called chutzpah. Chutzpah, to translate that into English, probably means cheekiness. You've got to be daring. You have to do daring things. You have to, don't take no for an answer. If someone slams the door in your face, you just go through the door and get there to the CEOs and show them your powers, your magic, your talents, your skills. Next thing is to always look cool. Dress cool. Don't go with bow ties and top hats. You know, that's passé. That's finished. That's out. Some of you might not agree with me. Okay, I respect you. But to most of the young magicians, I say, you know, look like Armani, look like Versace, look like the Matrix. Remember the Matrix, the first Matrix, sure, has a whole spoon bending sequence,
yes,
in it, when Keanu Reeves walks into the Oracle and a child teaches him how to bend a spoon. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes wonder, how did I manage to instill spoon bending into world culture? But it's iconic now. George Clooney played me, Robert De Niro played me in a movie. So as long as you look cool, and you act cool, and you activate your charisma, you don't have to be good looking. You don't have to be a Tom Cruise to have charisma. You don't have to look handsome. Charisma is something that you're probably born with, but most people don't know how to activate it. So activate it. Go get to my website on urigeller.com. There's nothing there that costs money. Everything is free. Most of my books are free to read. Look at the way I conduct interviews. Look at the shows I have done in the past. Mm-hmm. Learn from that. Another important aspect is to smell good. I know this sounds freaky, but I wear Hermes. I just go to a cologne shop and I buy the best aftershave. It's called Hermes, because scent, that triggers memories. People remember smells.
Exactly right.
You know, I sometimes walk in the street after a rainfall and I remember my childhood because the smell triggers memories. So it's really important to smell good because you're with people. People are around you. They want your autograph. You go to interviews. You go to meetings, board meetings. You go to lecture. You do magic to corporations. So you don't only want to look cool and dress cool. You want to smell good.
It's all part of your branding, basically.
I didn't hear that.
You're saying that's all part of your branding.
I don't know if it's branding. I just learned that, you know, it's a natural thing I did. The next thing is to remember to look, to make sure that your teeth look good. And I know you won't hear this from anyone else, but I say this to you. If you have bad teeth, go and fix them. Invest in yourself. Because a smile is $1 million. Mm-hmm. And show me one presenter on television in America that has bad teeth. Zero. Everyone has good teeth. It's part of you. So if you're selling yourself, if you want to be successful, if you want to look cool and good and clean and nice, you have to have good teeth.
I'll tell you what, on that point, my wife was attracted to me first by my smile. She liked my teeth. And that was, she's told me many years after that was, you know, what first attracted her to me.
Well, that's true. So there you go. You're validating what I'm saying.
Exactly.
The next thing is, because we are in the era of internet and Twitter and Instagram and WhatsApp and FaceTime and Facebook, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's very important to market yourself. It's very important for you to have a website. I don't take that BS that you say to me, oh, well, I'm building one. Yes, I'm thinking of doing one. No, don't think. Get it now done. The universe doesn't like delays. Get the website done tonight. If you don't know how to build a website, give someone $250 and they will build it for you.
Right.
So you have to have a website, because a website is like an international business card. You want to have more shows? You want a website. On your website, you don't have to. My website is overly complicated. It's very difficult to navigate, but it's there. You need good pictures. You need the contacts. You need a little about yourself. You need a few endorsements from celebrities. You need, most important, how to contact you. I just said the word contact and someone is calling me. So that's telepathy.
I love it.
you need to have your email address on your website, telephone numbers, and that's what you need a website for, and it has to look professional. Don't do it kind of an amateur, homemade website. If you have a car, and you drive a car, and you do bar mitzvahs, or you do weddings, don't be embarrassed to splash your name on the car, to advertise you, because when you park the car, you walk away, there are hundreds of people who pass by your car. So they say, oh my gosh, I'm doing a bar mitzvah or a birthday present. There is a telephone number. That's a magician. So you go spread the word. But the most important is to create an act that is so mind-blowing, is so controversial, that will get you into the newspapers, will get you on the morning news, and you want to get into the media.
That's a very good point. That's something that really, I think, helped make your career was getting into the media. And it was something, well, as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, when we were talking about you were having your photos taken with celebrities, and before long, you became that celebrity that people wanted to have their picture taken with you.
Yeah, because let me give you an example of what I told Leo Souchard. Leo Souchard won the Next Story Geller show in Israel 13 years ago.
I love that guy. Now he's very good.
With Barbara Streisand, with Beyonce, with Rihanna, you name it. He has pictures with Bill Gates and Bill Clinton, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I taught him a lesson. I told him, listen, Leo, when you see a celebrity, don't be afraid to approach them and ask for a selfie or a picture, because they want the picture more than you want the picture with them. It's amazing that, but when you have these talents and skills of a mentalist, celebrities want you around because they want to touch that mysteriousness. So, yes, don't be embarrassed to approach a celebrity and tell him or tell her, hey, can I have a picture with you? May I have a picture with you? And then you pull out your iPhone or your Samsung and you take a selfie. And you use that picture on your website. Because when people get on your website and see a picture of you with Beyonce or Madonna, they say, wow, this guy's getting around. Let's book him. If he's with Madonna, he must be good.
Right. Yeah.
So,
good point.
Pictures with celebrities are important. And I had the chutzpah to go to Elvis Presley and John Lennon and Elton John and everyone. And we somehow became friends. And, how I paved my way.
I've always said it's kind of like asking out the prom queen for a date. What can she say but no? You go up and ask a celebrity if you could have a photo taken. What if they say no? I mean, so what? You know, the best outcome is they're going to say yes, and the worst is no. So what have you got to lose? You know, so try.
Absolutely. No one will say no. Listen, this is how I learned about celebrities and autographs and how to act with your fans. When I was 13, I lived in Cyprus with my mother, and I used to come back to my dad because my parents divorced, and I used to visit him for 2 weeks. One day, I crossed the street in Tel Aviv, and lo and behold, I see one of the most famous American singers at that time. His name was Chubby Checker, and he came out with his song, Let's Twist Again,
We
did last summer.
Sure.
And I saw him, and I said to myself, oh, my God, that's Chubby Checker. I'm 13. I got to get his autograph. So I quickly go up to him, and I say to him, Mr. Chubby Checker, can I have your autograph? And you know, I had no pen. And he says to me, what's your name? And I say, my name is Uri Geller. And he said, look, I don't have a pen on me, and I don't have a piece of paper. But there is a kiosk across the street. Can you see it? I say, yes. He said, come, let's go over there. So he crossed the street with me, and he was patient. He took his time. He asked for a pen and a piece of paper, and he signed that piece of paper for Uri Geller, my best wishes, Chubby Checker. That was the best lesson in my life.
Wow.
Always be nice to your fans. Always be nice to people. Be patient, because when you impress a fan, they will never forget that. You might forget the fan because there are thousands of fans and you meet thousands of people, but they will never forget you. So that's very important.
Well, likewise, if he would have chastised you or spurned you or turned you away or something, certainly you would have had a negative connotation towards him forever also, saying, well, I don't like that guy. And that story also goes on. So it's easier to be nice to people than it is to be bad, basically.
That's correct. Also, in your act, when people ask me, what do you call yourself today? I say, I'm Uri Geller. But if they insist on a title, I call myself a mystifier, because mystifier is kind of sitting on the fence. It's a gray line. It's not here and it's not there. And I use the word intuitive, because, you know, again, the only real valuable thing is intuition. So use words that are again, are semi kind of paranormal, psychic, because you want to project that message of mysticism and reality,
well,
that
might be. Yeah, tell me what you think of this. This is a title I've been using for quite some time, and that is paradoxologist.
I love it because I've never heard of that word before.
If you were a paradox is, and an ologist would be one who studies paradoxes, and so I present paradoxes in the show, things that shouldn't happen, you know.
I love it. I love it very much. But I can tell you this: that if you stop 100 people in Times Square, 99 won't know what it means.
That's true. And that's why at the beginning I'll have to say I'm a paradoxologist. And then I explain what a paradox is and one who studies paradoxes. And so that's what you'll be seeing in the show, will be some paradoxes.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Tell me a little about yourself. How did you get to do this podcast?
Sure. Good question. I had many years ago been working with Dodd Vickers, and he had the Magic Newswire, and he'd asked me to come and join him as a co-host on a show, which we did for about a year or so. And then as I was attending Magic conventions, I was sending some content to him that were daily updates from the convention, as I would talk with registrants and talent and lecturers and the organizers and the dealers, etc. And so that way people got the feeling as if that they were there. But he had said, you know, this is really not what my podcast is about. You might want to consider starting your own podcast. So back in 2011, I decided to make the leap, and so I did. And so that's why that, you know, I do have a weekly podcast that I'm putting out each Thursday, in which that I talk with friends. I'd probably say that 80 to 85% of the people I talk with are those with whom I have been friends and have worked with at the Magic Castle or here in Houston at the Magic Island, or I've worked with at conventions backstage, or have known for a variety of reasons and through a variety of places where we have been. And so it's just kind of conversations with conjurers, what I call it. But there are people with whom I have not had a really sit down, such as yourself. We've not actually shaken hands and not really spoken before today. And so this is more the rarity, but for the most part, they're just conversations which would allow the listeners to kind of have a better idea of what these people are like. So this way they kind of feel like, hey, these guys put on their pants the same way I do, you know. And also, as we continue our conversations, that usually something comes out, much like we've been talking about here today, about creativity. What are some of your muses? I mean, this is not a question and answer. It's not a 20-question kind of a thing in which I'm saying, who's your favorite magician? How did you get started? It's nothing about that. It's just a conversation, and whatever comes out will be not only entertaining but educational, that people can take away and learn from then as well. And through that, a lot of people become friends with my friends, because when they see them, they'll say, oh, I didn't know that you like golf, or you were interested in, yeah, I don't, whatever it is, you know, this particular hobby. And so they feel like that they have a, you know, something that is more of a sense of kinship, that they can, you know, stop and talk to somebody or ask for an autograph, as opposed to, you know, feeling a little bit embarrassed whenever that they would see the person. So it kind of humanizes everybody a little bit. And so that's kind of what my intent was.
That reminds me that people should network.
Yes.
Network means take business cards, keep a phone book, always back up your telephone because you might lose it, so you don't lose all your telephone contacts. To important people and to friends, always follow up by sending them a, you know, Happy New Year card, birthday cards.
Sure.
You know, you can do it through the internet, through your phone.
Right.
In a split second, you can send someone a happy birthday or greetings for holidays, because those people will be amazed that you remember them. So networking is very important. Now, to those magicians who kind of claim that I was a magician and I am a magician, I have a big surprise to tell you. And, you know, I really, today I can afford to say whatever I want to. But do you realize, Scott, that I've never read a magic book ever in my entire life?
Really?
I think the only magic show I've ever seen was in Las Vegas, because I missed my plane, so I decided to go to see Siegfried and Roy. I never learned magic. I was never a magician. Everything I do, I came up with my own ideas. And you, and I always leave it in the department that it is real, because it is real. And if you guys listening to us now, and girls, because there are lots of magician ladies, is that if you come to think of it and you kind of brainstorm with your mind, you will discover that you also encountered some things in your lifetime that you have no explanation to, whether it was deja vu or whether someone that you haven't spoken to for 2 years, you think about them that morning and they call you. You drive through a street and you think of a lamp, or of a street lamp, and it turns off. There are so many little paranormal things that happen around us that really don't have any scientific explanation. But I just want to remind everyone again that my website is urigeller.com. That's URIGELLER.com. You'll find videos there. You'll find my books free of charge. Have a look at what the CIA says. It's right under my museum page. And you will be amazed what the CIA wanted to do. Unbelievable. I also advise you to read a book that was written by Annie Jacobson, who is a Pulitzer nominee. She wrote a book called Phenomena. It's the secret paranormal work that the American government is conducting. So even today, as we speak, there are definitely at least 20 CIA-type agencies worldwide that are using remote viewers who can send their mind through space and time and bring back information that otherwise they couldn't achieve. Even with the most sophisticated satellites, there are things that still cannot be reached with the highest sophisticated technology. So they use our remote viewers.
Yeah, I remember you had mentioned earlier about George Clooney playing you, and that was Men Who Stare at Goats, which was about that very thing, about the scientific experiments, I guess, trying to look for remote viewing. And speaking of movies, you had said something earlier about The Matrix, and that was something I was some years ago talking with Banachek about. There was a particular scene about where, you know, he went into that room where the children were bending spoons and all of that, and that the lady who was the Oracle had said to Neo that, don't worry about that, I'll clean that up later. And he said, what are you talking about? And as he turned around, he knocked over a dish. And so it was. She predicted what was going to be happening. And he had said, I wish there were things like that that I could do during a show. And so those would be great little effects that you could anticipate. I mean, I don't know anyone else who's doing something like that in a show right now. But if you could have a series of predictions, not necessarily predictions, but something that you knew was going to be happening later in the show, and then they actually came to pass, as opposed to having a prediction as an out. You know what I'm saying? I think there's a show that could be built like that.
You know, in The Matrix, there was even a more powerful scene where the child tells Keanu Reeves, there is no spoon. It's your mind that bends. That is so, so, so powerful, because that's quantum mechanics. That's quantum entanglement. That, again, brings a question. Scott, do you really exist, or am I creating you right now, or do I exist and you're creating me? Unbelievable things. And now I'll relay a story to you. What National Security Agency, CIA, wanted to do with these powers. This is so freaky and so mind-blowing. It's so science fiction-y that if you don't see it on that top-secret document that is on my website, straight from NSA, you won't believe it. But in England, when MI5 tested me under laboratory-controlled conditions, one of the scientists that tested me was David Bohm, a physicist who was a friend of Albert Einstein. I actually have a picture with David Bohm, and just recently I bought an Albert Einstein letter that I will display in my museum, because he was writing letters with David Bohm. But I did something that there was a dematerialization of something. It was almost like a poltergeist effect. And the I guess the scientists relate that to the CIA. The CIA relate that to NSA, National Security Agency. And they were so bewildered by that that they said the following: well, if there's one Uri Geller who can do materialize an object or dematerialize an object with the power of the mind, what would 10 Uri Gellers be able to do? So there is a document which was top secret up to about a year and a half ago that talks about 10 people like me concentrating on a Russian city or any city and dematerializing the city. This is serious. I'm not making this up.
Wow.
So you will find it on my website under what the media said about the CIA release documents. It's a document by a website called Mudrock, if I'm not mistaken, and you will see that in black and white. And believe it or not, psychic phenomena tests and experiments have gone deep black. They would the intelligence services are studying the powers of the mind secretly, and I'll explain why this is important for CIA, NSA, Mossad, MI5, MI6, etc., etc., etc. Beside terror attacks, which are contained, you know, people shoot each other, bombs explode. So 10 killed here, 200 killed here, that's tragic. But what the Secret Services are really concerned about is a dirty bomb. They're worried that someday a terrorist group will be able to to create a nuclear weapon in a suitcase. You know, these terrorists, some of them are very sophisticated. Some of them go to Cambridge and Yale and Oxford, and then they join terror groups and so on. So there are some very clever people among them. And that's what we are afraid of, is a nuclear bomb detonating downtown LA or New York or
sure.
Paris or London. And there you have, you know, 350,000 dead, and for 10 years you won't be able to enter that area.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So the Secret Services are using everything in their capacity to bring in information. This is why they're taking seriously people who have proven to them that they are they're very highly intuitively honed, and they can be used as tools to bring in information that spies and the ordinary sophisticated spying tools, including satellites, cannot achieve.
Right. Hey, listen, before our time runs out, I want to ask you also about dowsing. You know, that's something that I know that you do and have done for other companies, and I have done that myself years ago when I was working in the oil field, and there was a fellow who was a welder, and we had to dig, you know, a hole, you know, to find a leak, and then he would weld the pipe and everything. But sometimes in order to find the right pipe, you had to dig a bigger hole, and so what he would do was take a couple of iron, these welding rods, and bend them at a right angle and hold them until they crossed, knowing that the water and the metal pipe was below there, so we'd know where to dig to find that. And I thought that was the first time I'd ever seen dowsing. And can you talk just briefly about that?
We've got a few more minutes, 6 minutes. So look, the dowsing tools are bent wires, twigs. Those are really tools for your mind. It's not the twig or the copper bent rod that finds the water or the oil or the mineral you're looking for. It's really your mind. Somehow your mind sends an energy wave into your hands and they start shaking. But let me tell you that in the 70s, I was asked by quite a few mining companies to look for oil and gold, etc., and minerals. And one of them was Mexico. The oil minister asked me to look for oil. I found one of the largest oil fields offshore for Mexico. The president was so impressed. The president was then López Portillo. that he made me a Mexican citizen. I actually have a Mexican passport, and it's number one. No one got a Mexican passport. You have to be born there. I did a very successful oil dowsing for companies. So I do believe that one can find oil or mineral or gold or water, whatever you focus your mind on. So I use the palms of my hands, not tools. And I really believe in dowsing. And dowsing can, you can look at the history of dowsing. It goes back centuries and centuries. American right. shamans, we're talking about hundreds of years ago. I mean, shamans would do the rain dance. They could disperse clouds. You know, there is paranormal stuff all through history. There's paranormal feats in the Bible, paranormal feats in Buddhism, paranormal feats in the Quran, paranormal feats in everywhere in the Bible. I mean, it's amazing. Throughout history, there are people who claim that they have powers, and we read about it in holy scriptures today. But that's my explanation for dowsing. Again, the mind does that. You know, Scott, I think that we covered kind of everything.
Yep.
And if some of you guys are listening to this podcast, if you want to ask me a question, my website has my email address, and you can email me. I try to email everyone back. And if you ever come to Israel, just email me. Say, hey, Uri, I'm coming to Israel. I'm coming to visit Old Jaffa. I really don't mind meeting you. We can photograph together and so on. And
you no longer have your place in London. I remember hearing that you had like a tree with a lot of silverware. It was built from that, I guess, as well.
I have a Cadillac, which will be in my museum. I bought a Cadillac in 1976 in New York, a Fleetwood Brougham, 1976, black. I never drove it because it was so big. And what I did, I riveted 2,000 spoons to its body. And all the spoons are important spoons, like President Kennedy, Muhammad Ali, Elvis Presley, John Lennon. Uh-huh. I mean, you name it. I even have a rock crystal sphere that belonged to Leonardo da Vinci that I got as a gift from Salvador Dali, because I worked with Dali for 2 years. And that's going to be in the museum. So my house, still in England. We love living in Israel. My son lives in London. He's a senior prosecutor. My daughter lives in L.A. We have two granddaughters. And that's it. Basically, that's my life.
I want to congratulate you, too. I understand that your daughter is successful, I guess, as an actress there in L.A., and also your son may soon be the attorney general for the Queen or something. So hope everything all works out there.
I'd rather not talk about that, but, you know, God willing, who knows.
Yeah, who
but
knows?
Listen, Scott.
One question is, you know, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. So what is it that your philosophy of life, what is it that it didn't have to be a word or a phrase, and I don't mean necessarily like abracadabra kind of a thing. What I mean is, what do you live by? What is your important philosophy?
This is what I live by.
This
is what I live by. Every morning I wake up and I put myself in an attitude of gratitude. Please remember that. Tomorrow morning, all of you, wake up, put yourselves in an attitude of gratitude.
Perfect.
Listen, a big hug to all of you.
Thank you.
A big kiss all the way from Old Jaffa. I love you all. I respect you all, even to those who don't believe in me at all and think that I'm just a good magician. I respect you too. And Scott, thanks very much for doing this podcast with me.
Well, thank you, Uri, for being available. I appreciate it, and it's looking forward to getting a chance to shake your hand then sometime. So for the magicwordpodcast.com, that was Uri Geller. This is Scotty out. Wow, was that pretty fantastic or what? Wow, I don't know what to say. It's going to be kind of hard to follow up with someone else here in the future after having a conversation with a person who is quite controversial. I know that many magicians have one side or another, or a feeling, I should say, or opinion towards what they think about Uri Geller and whether they like him or not. It's kind of like in politics, I guess. You have a decision, and it's not going to be changed. So anyhow, I hope you enjoyed it. for what it was. I certainly did. I have admiration and respect for this gentleman, and he is, as you can tell, very charismatic and great. So I want to thank him very much for being my guest on the podcast here this week. It was just fantastic. And also, again, a big thanks to Joey Corsillo for helping to get this set up for me. And as I was thinking back at the first of the podcast, where I was thanking not only the listeners, but also those people who have been behind the microphone and been on the podcast, I also want to thank those people who have been the friends of the magic word. Those are the ones who are the ones financially responsible for making sure this continues to go. I probably would have given this up some time ago and thought, nobody really cares because they're not putting their money where their mouths are. And they like it, but I'm not getting any love in return as far as making any kind of a financial pledge or anything. But little at a time, a few people have done that. And I want to thank each of the Friends of the Magic Word for your support. And if you're interested in becoming a Friend of the Magic Word, I could certainly use that support, because out of the nearly 20,000 subscribers of the Magic Word podcast, I believe we've only had just less than 115 people who have ever donated even $1 in total, let alone those who, a few people who are pledging from month to month. So if you want to give a donation of one time or an ongoing pledge, or perhaps each year to donate, I'll take whatever and whenever. So thank you guys very much. You can go to themagicwordpodcast.com. There you can find out how that you can become a friend and some of the perks you can receive then also at certain giving levels, in which that you can certainly help this podcast to perhaps go on for another 500 episodes. I also want to thank the sponsors. We've had a few people from time to time that have come and gone who have paid as a sponsor for a few of the episodes. I want to thank those guys over the last 500 episodes also for coming in and to be a sponsor as well. And also, some of the people who have spoken as guests on the podcast have also given some things like lecture notes and DVDs and tricks and everything like that that we have had as a prize to give out. So I want to thank those guys and also congratulate again all the winners. I don't know how many, couple thousands of dollars that things that we have given away here as well. So I hope that you continue to listen and to enter the contest. Perhaps the next time we have a contest, you could be a winner. I do have some people I've already spoken to and who have already given me some things which are going to be in some upcoming contests that you can enter. You can always find out about that through the newsletter, so be sure to subscribe to our pod letter, like a newsletter, so subscribe to our pod letter, and that comes out weekly, concurrent with when these podcasts are released. This particular podcast, number 500, by the way, is being released while I am in Scottsdale, Arizona for the International Brotherhood of Magicians Convention, and of course there I will be doing daily updates. So I don't want this to be lost amongst all the rest of the podcasts from the past. I hope that that you do listen to this and tell other people to go back and listen to number 500, the one with Uri Geller. I know that they're going to like it as much as you did. And so until our next podcast, which will be coming up right away with the IBM convention updates, stay well, get booked, and remember, when you wake up tomorrow and every day, be in an attitude of gratitude. This is Scotty out.